The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. More than 70 years of Ed Morse quality and service across the great state of Florida, and that includes more than 1 million happy customers. At Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, you can come and see the all-new Cadillac, the XT6, beautiful, one day only, Thursday, June 20th, right in the showroom from 5 to 7 p.m. Food will be served. It's all free. You can RSVP at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. And best of all, well, the XT6 is what's best of all, but Ira Kaufman will be there, right there hanging out with you. You can eat with him and look at the Cadillacs, talk to general manager Hector LeBron. What a great night. Just RSVP at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. Can't go to Brandon? Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa the following night, Friday, June 20th. Same thing. The all-new XT6 will be on display. Ira Kaufman will be there. Food from 5 to 7 p.m. Go to edmorescadillactampa.com to RSVP. They're just west of 275 on Fletcher. And while you're there, you can look at the 2019 Cadillac models. Many select in-stock models. Zero down, zero security, zero first month. All the details at edmorescadillactampa.com and at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. So much to shop for there. You can shop online right now at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. They also have the Cadillac XT5, the beautiful crossover, $266 lease per month. All the details at edmorescadillacbrandon.com. We thank Ed Morse Cadillac, Tampa, and Brandon for all their support, for all of Ira's work. And here's the sage himself.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the latest edition of the internationally popular, the well-renowned Ira Kaufman Podcast. You know him, you love him, he's the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the custodian of Canton, the king of Newport, Richie. What else can I add to you, Ira?
And, may I add, gentlemen, the only locally produced sports podcast in the Tampa Bay area, on the Google Top 50, and in the words of Steve Isbitz, all genres, gentlemen, all genres. So I pop up on that, you know, like a wildflower. You never know. You put a little Roundup on me. You try to calm me down, but I pop through the dirt every couple of weeks.
Back now, you were Nancy Grace,
and I'm proud of it. Yeah. Well, Nancy Grace, I got bigger fish to fry.
Is George Stephanopoulos among them,
possibly. Chuck Todd, I'm coming after you.
Oh, he's on there once in a while. Sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd. That is one of the most hilarious ones. Sleepy-eyed Chuck Todd, who's a big Miami Hurricanes fan.
And Laura Ingram, don't get too comfortable over there.
What I can say is, you were up there for 50 weeks, right?
I believe so.
Something of that nature. Well, we got Buck stuff to talk about. Hell with George Stephanopoulos and Laura Ingram. And Laura Ingram's got enough trouble with her advertisers.
You know who was also up 50 weeks? Gerald McCoy on the Buck roster. By the way, we should tell, we're at one Buck place.
Yes.
We just had the first day of mandatory mini camp. It'll run through Thursday. And our man Steve Isbitz couldn't be joining us today because of a family situation. But we carry on.
Yes, we carry on. Now I got to ask you this, Ira. Did today's mini camp practice look any different than last week's OTA practice? Did it look any different at all?
Absolutely zero difference.
Yeah, it's underwear football. It's the same thing.
There were fans there. That's about it.
Yeah, there were fans.
There were 1,500 season ticket holders were invited. It was in the Glazer Shed. And people think I'm mocking that place when I say that. That's a beautiful place. But personally, I know they call it something else. And I'll call it
Advent. Advent. Well, name on it.
Just like the Denner Depression is officially called something else. When those people cut Steve and I a check, I'll be happy to say the right name. Hey, I'm a capitalist too. I got my hand out just like everybody else. Got us a check. We're not asking for $100 million.
You walk down the street with your hand out, the Kemper. I've been out there with you.
Yeah, it usually gets spit on, but no.
It was a good turnout today. And our young man Zach's with us today.
Yes.
As a full-fledged member of this podcast, welcome, Zach.
Thank you.
Zach, the intern, is taking over for Steve here.
You know, the man beast intern, yes. Who's doing a heck of a job. Let's start off where we should start off.
The Glazer Shed?
What'd you monitor today, Zach?
All over Jameis Winston once again.
Boy, he is a singular focus for young Zach over there.
He should be.
And he should be. Because if we're monitoring Blaine Gabbert, by the time we end this podcast, he might not have thrown his first pass with that windup of his. Oh, you talk about an over-the-top. He looks like Juan Marichal out there.
Well, that's a great line. And people YouTube Juan Marichal. You don't know who that is.
He was my favorite baseball player growing up.
Well, I'm sure he was. The Giants. Favorite player. But when you talk about a windup and you refer to Juan Marichal, that's a windup, people. So, please, if you don't know who Juan Marichal is, YouTube him, check it out, and you'll get Irish line.
He's the guy that hit John Roseboro over the head in 1965.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around. The Roseboro clubbed him.
No, Marichal clubbed Roseboro.
Yeah.
Marichal was at bat. He was a pitcher at bat.
Yes.
Roseboro was sitting behind.
Oh, Marichal was batting.
Koufax was pitching. And the previous, and there was bad blood between the Giants. Just a little lesson for you over here, Zach. Candlestick Park, summer 65. You know, the Giants and Dodgers were horrible rivals. Brutal. You think Yankees and Red Sox? No. Giants, Dodgers. That's the rival.
Because that goes back decades.
Goes back to the New York days.
Yeah.
Marichal at the plate. And he had dusted off Maury Wills a couple of times. Bad blood. Koufax was known as a guy who was too gentlemanly to hit somebody. And Roseboro knew that. So Marichal digs in at the plate. Roseboro throws a ball. And Roseboro drops the ball on purpose and fires the ball back to Koufax. And Marichal said it nicked his ear. It was so close to his ear on the throw. Roseboro did that on purpose. Marichal turned around, said to Roseboro, who had a mask on, "Why did you do that?" Roseboro got out of his crouch, and Marichal clubbed him right over the head.
With the baseball bat.
The worst incidents of baseball violence in the game's history.
Wow.
Marichal suspended in the heat of a pennant race, 8 to 10 days, which sounds, and he was fined a couple of grand, which seems like peanuts now. Giants lost the pennant by a game or two.
And you're talking about ugly baseball, and I know we're getting off the beaten path here, but didn't Brandon Phillips with the Reds kick Brandon LaRouche? I want to say LaRouche was the last name. Backup catcher for the Cardinals kicked him in the head in a brawl and ended his career with a concussion.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that Sue kicked Evan Smith in the head, and we'll talk about that. Anyway, Zach, a couple of your impressions. What kind of day did young Mr. Winston have? A
couple of balls got away from him, a few overthrows, a couple of interceptions, but for the most part, he looked sharp. He didn't have Mike Evans out there. Evans was out once again. Chris Godwin taking over the number one role. A lot of Rashard Perriman. I noticed.
He didn't practice much last week, right?
He did not practice last week. He got in some good work today with Perriman.
I think Perriman's an important player, Lee, because even if he doesn't, you know, he's not going to catch 85 balls, just like DeSean Jackson. First of all, maybe Winston can develop a better rapport with Perriman than he had with Jackson. It couldn't be any worse.
Exactly.
Could already be any looking worse. Better.
Exactly.
And two, you know, Arians is all about stretching the field and opening up things for Godwin, Evans, and the tight ends. Lee, he's a big player, Perriman.
Well, this is what I'm going to say about that and comparing him to DeSean Jackson. And I know there are people out there that DeSean Jackson could do no wrong. I don't know if it's because he shined on PlayStation or something, but there are some people out there, they thought DeSean Jackson is Jerry Rice reinvented, which he was not. Perriman plays okay, he'll match DeSean Jackson's numbers. DeSean Jackson did not have an all-pro, not even close to an all-pro.
No, not even close.
And I don't care who the quarterback was. So if Perriman has an okay year, that was DeSean Jackson. And an okay year.
I've heard quite a few. Now, Lee, you've heard the same things. And Zach, you came in late, but you might have heard it. Some suggestions from some fans, I'm not saying an overwhelming majority, but there were some suggestions that DeSean Jackson, when Winston was under center, for whatever reason, wouldn't lay out for Winston's passes. He let him fly over his head. He didn't dive. Whereas with a Fitzpatrick, it looked like he was trying harder. Lee, have you heard that? And are you buying any of that?
I heard that from enough people, incredible people, that you damn right I buy it.
Why would that be, Lee? Why? He's trying to make a living. DeSean Jackson.
He won Fitzpatrick in there. DeSean Jackson, I'm not even going to get into the stuff that I've heard from credible people. You brought this up, so I'm not going to say other stories I heard and other stunts he pulled. But the most famous one that everybody knows is when DeSean Jackson got on Fox Sports 1 national broadcast, and he said that Fitzpatrick should be the starting quarterback. And how often does a receiver go on national TV, undercut a starting quarterback like that?
That's Terrell Owens like over there.
So, DeSean Jackson did everything he could to cut Jameis's knees off. I've heard other stuff from players, from guys on offense, that DeSean Jackson did that not putting out is probably one of the best things he did. This guy was no good. And in a good way, perversely, in a good way, DeSean Jackson, along with Swaggy Baker, proved the absence of any leadership in that locker room. Proved it.
It also doesn't say much for the research that goes in the executive suite of One Buck Place in terms of scouting free agents.
Well, I don't think anyone with the Bucks foresaw that Jackson was going to be blow up the locker room like he did. But Swaggy Baker, they knew about. To this day, there are suits, and I think you know who I'm talking about, and I'm sure you've talked to them too, and I'm sure they told you the same thing, that they knew Swaggy Baker was a unique personality, let's say that. But still, they signed him, even though they knew about this. They admit, yeah, we knew Swaggy Baker, blah, blah, blah. Okay, why did you go after him and not Calais Campbell? It was a mistake. The mistake's gone. Do the Bucks have enough time for those same people to save their careers here? Because Albert Breer said there are two general managers that there's no doubt about it. Their jobs are on the line this year. One of them is Jason Light.
Zach, before I ask you to pinpoint Winston's gaffes today, one thing I have noticed, and I've noticed it all during OTAs, and I'm impressed with it. When that ball comes out of his hands, say he's throwing it deep down the right sidelines, a lot of snap on that ball. It's a strong arm. I think, Zach, a little stronger than I've seen in the past. Footwork can help in that regard. Maybe, Leftwich, Christensen, Arians, the three-headed monster. But, boy, there's a lot of loft on that ball, and it's deep.
A lot of it.
And that ball travels.
His deep ball looks a lot better, a lot more precise also. I don't know if it's something where, maybe like everyone kind of pinpointed DeSean Jackson and was like, oh, we can't connect with DeSean, so his deep ball is terrible. But whether it's Evans, whether it's Godwin, whether it's Perriman, O.J. Howard over the middle or something like that, I see 35 to 40 yards down the field, and it's falling right into their lap.
Give me who had the picks today, Zach?
Two picks. One was Jamel Dean in a pass that didn't shoot out of his hand. It looked like he didn't get enough.
Sideline pass?
Sideline pass.
To the Jamel left sideline?
Undercuts it. Really great play by the rookie at Auburn, yes. Jamel Dean. But a lot of speed at cornerback, it would appear. A lot more. And the second one was just an overthrow over the middle. Kenshaw Bryce, the safety that we got from
when you overthrow over the middle, Lee, you're dead. You're dead in the water.
Yeah.
There's always a guy 10 yards back that is going right in his hand.
Yeah, you got to cross your fingers, hope the ball hits the ground.
Kenshaw Bryce fell right in his lap. There was another one that got batted up that Hargraves just missed. Got batted high in the air.
It was a very competitive.
Got batted high in the air. He's chasing it down. Just landed out of his reach.
Lee, who'd you notice that did not practice today?
Well, of course, Smart Pat wasn't practicing. Justin Evans, who is in a boot now, I might add. That's not
ominous.
Good. It sure isn't a good sign to me when you're in a boot. He's been off the field how long? And Arian said after practice that he had a procedure. That's why he's wearing a boot. So you have, well, I guess a procedure in early June is a heck of a lot better than early September. But he's having a procedure now? When's the last? I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think it raises questions. Lee, a procedure in early June? What is going on here?
Why wasn't this done in December or January?
Doesn't that suggest that injury was not healing?
Wasn't healing the way it should have.
Very well could have been.
Evan Smith, still on the sidelines.
Yeah, he's still in the floppy hat patrol.
Mike Evans.
And I'm not over the concern with Evans. I mean, as long as that guy, he doesn't need mini camp. He doesn't need training camp. As long as that guy's healthy in September, that's all I care
about. See anything out of young Devin White? Does he look like he belongs? Does he look like he knows what he's doing?
I mean, he was calling out the plays of the defense. I noticed that. He's standing in front of everyone. He's screaming it out.
Lee, the new number 93 around. I heard Arians had a heck of a line about the suit. Were you standing there?
No, I was waiting for Chris Godwin, who, as it turned out, he signed so many autographs. He was late getting back to his meeting, so I couldn't talk to him.
Somebody told me Arians was asked about Sue and said he's got a football face. That is a tremendous line from Arians. I mean, he is a walking soundbite. He's going to be great for us.
Who was it that said Mike Ditka had a face that looked like a fist?
It's right along the same line.
Yeah. Zach was informing us of players who did well in practice.
By the way, it was an indoor practice.
It was in the Glazer shed. That place should be called the Malcolm Glazer Dome. Facility. Malcolm Glazer did so much for his franchise, for this football community. That place, that indoor facility, should be named Malcolm Glazer. It really should. I know it's named something else, and when they cut a check to Joe Buck's fan, we'll be more than happy to call it that other name. But until then, it's the Glazer Shed.
You're a businessman, the captain.
I'm a capitalist. What can I say?
I don't know. I like the Glazer Dome. I feel like that sounds nice.
I always thought maybe the Glazer Hut sounded better because it sort of looks like a giant Quonset hut. It really does. But it's a beautiful facility. Don't get me wrong.
I was telling them last week, I just really like the word dome. The Bolts used to play over at Tropicana Field. They called it the Thunderdome. I think that's the best stadium name ever is the Thunderdome.
All right, Lee, I'm going to get this discussion started on the old 93. We got a new 93, but the old 93 made his decision. Lee, I believe he visited three different franchises. He picked the third out of the three, left Cleveland and Baltimore waiting at the altar. I think both of those teams thought they had a real shot at McCoy. Mm-hmm. So they're probably a little bit disappointed.
There was where he was really considering Baltimore.
Went to Charlotte. I guess he went out with some players that very first day.
Is that right?
I think that made an impression on him about the camaraderie and the teamwork. A couple of things. One, he stays in the NFC. He stays in the division. Three, and Cleveland's an up-and-comer, but they haven't done it yet. Baltimore's decent. Carolina's not a bad football team, and I want to remind all our listeners of one very important point. Carolina was 6-2 at midseason and looked like an NFC powerhouse, and what happened? Cam Newton went down. They said it was this. They said it was this. That was no strain. Cam Newton couldn't throw a ball more than 15 yards, and everybody knew it, including Ron Rivera, but he didn't have anybody better. Yeah. When he got hurt, that season ended.
Well, what was startling to me about Cam Newton was when they played the Bucks at the Dinner Depression, when they needed a Hail Mary pass, of all people, they pulled him.
Exactly, rightly.
I never thought I'd ever see that before.
Yeah. Great point, Lee. The man had no arm strength, and I'm not blaming Cam Newton.
No.
He hurt for going out there.
A bum shoulder.
Yeah, here's what I'd heard. I don't know how true this is. We'll get to your point in a second. I had heard, and it's speculation, but it's informed speculation. I had heard McCoy picked the Panthers because of the quarterback. You're like, well, wait a minute. Browns have an up-and-comer, Baker Mayfield, and man, he was on Twitter. Come on, Boomer, sooner come to Cleveland.
Ravens have an up-and-comer. In a different respect.
Lamar Jackson, to me, is a glorified wishbone quarterback.
I don't know that he's the long-term answer.
Very good runner, but I'm not impressed with his arm. Newton, if healthy, is an absolute proven elite quarterback. Period. End sentence.
He was the MVP just a few
years
back.
Yeah, he got a team to a Super Bowl. And I also wonder, that was informed speculation I had read that McCoy picked, the best quarterback. And that makes sense. But I also think this should not be overlooked. Ron Rivera, defensive coach. When the Bucs had competent coaches the last couple times, and when Raheem Morris gets 10 wins, I'm sorry, that's competent. He was a defensive guy. McCoy had probably his best years with Shiano, a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. So Ron Rivera, an established coach. We don't know about Kitchens. Now, I know Harbaugh's established, but they're getting the quarterback. You don't know. Riverboat Ron's an established guy. He's a defensive player, a defensive coach, has a Super Bowl ring. I think that played a factor as well. How much, I don't know, but I heard quarterback was a big thing with McCoy.
Zach, I'm going to ask you this, representing the millennials out there. Do you understand why McCoy has been such a polarizing player in the Tampa Bay community? I'm not saying that the majority of Buck fans were disappointed with him since he was the third pick in 2010, but his detractors are loud. They're out there in social media in force. So I don't want to give him too much credit, but it ain't one or two people either. Zach, are you surprised? Was it say something about the Bay Area community, the kind of football we like? Are they not giving McCoy his due, in your opinion? What's going on with that?
Well, me personally, I've always been a McCoy supporter. I've always thought, you have a good football player on your roster, why get rid of him? That just seems stupid. Now, granted, it's the Bucs, but,
Did you understand the drumbeat of the satisfaction with him?
I understand just because for so long he's been associated with losing. He's been the face of a loser for the last 9 years, and also he wasn't sap. You think about 2013, he broke out, 9.5 sacks, something like that. Everyone thought that they had the next sap. Levante David was huge. We're like, we got the next sap in Brooks. And he wasn't that, and he's been associated with losing for so long. People are like, if you get rid of McCoy, maybe you have a change. Maybe it's
Lee,
something different.
It's out there for more than a few Bucks supporters that the Bucks are a better team by subtraction. Never mind Sue coming on.
I think part of that, and I agree with you, that's always been perplexed me. I think part of it was Ann Beckles, you know, former Bucks guard. He's a local, popular local radio sports personality. He's been beating this drum for literally a decade.
He has shaped a narrative.
Yeah, he's been beating this drum for a decade. I mean, NFL radio years ago had talked about how Beckles couldn't wait to get rid of McCoy. He's been on a crusade for a decade. It finally happened. McCoy almost retired before that. He saw that crusade, that goal of his come through. But I think that was part of it. But I just don't understand. You know, people bring up he's been to 6 Pro Bowls. The detractors immediately scoff. Oh, it's Pro Bowls. Well, correct me if I'm wrong. The Myron Lewis's of the world don't get to the Pro Bowl. You got to be at least competent to get to the Pro Bowl. And he's been there 6 times.
Levante David can't get there.
Well, you bring Levante David up, and that's a hell of a point. The people who go bananas on McCoy on social media, have you ever read them say a derogatory word at all about Levante David?
Almost never in 8-7 years.
And if you want to go all baseball war, and war is what wins above the replacements, BS stat. If you want to go all war, which is what these people pin on McCoy, all the Bucks defense is losing because of McCoy. Levante David has a worse record than McCoy.
Now, he wasn't the 3rd pick in the draft, David.
He was a second-round pick.
But I'm going to say this, Lee, and I don't think anybody can argue. To say that Gerald McCoy has not lived up to being the 3rd pick in that particular draft, I think that's stupid. Yeah. That's just stupid.
Yeah, because people, they expect, okay, you're the 3rd pick in the draft, you ought to be talked about as Cant and Madeira.
Perennial Pro Bowl player at your position, you that's not a bad pick.
That's what you want with the top 5 pick.
If you went with any general manager this coming spring, or a year from now, you go up to any general manager as a top 5 pick, and you say, hey, if your selection makes 6 Pro Bowls, would you be happy? They'll say, hell yeah. Not just yeah, but hell yeah. I just don't get the vitriol. My guess is, and I don't know this, it's just, again, speculation, just connecting the dots. I think it's 2 things. One, people don't like McCoy's personality for whatever reason. And you can't change a guy's personality. He is who he is. Bad, good, indifferent.
You mean the comic book stuff?
The comic book stuff, and he hammed it up for Hard Knocks, and he always tried to put himself out front.
The kimono.
Yeah. He liked the attention. I think that rubbed fans the wrong way, and that's why Levante David skates. Levante David is behind the scenes. He doesn't want to be out there. He's a nice guy. He's cooperative. But as far as talking to the media, he'll cooperate with us. He's not a bad guy whatsoever. But given his druthers, he wouldn't talk to us at all. If it was up to him. And I think that plays a part. And Levante David is happy to be in the background. He wants his football to do his talking. McCoy liked to be out there. And I think that, you know, he was the face of the franchise and a losing franchise for too many years. People associated McCoy with losing. Then he had on the personality that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Zach and I were talking about this earlier. I say this tongue-in-cheek, but it's not exactly garbage. Bucks, and I don't say this in a critical way. I'm just saying Bucks fans, a good number of them. It's an observation. Bucks fans always have to have a player to hate. For a while, it was Quincy Black. Then it was Chris Conte. Every year, there's a player they hate. And one of those players was Gerald McCoy. Well, there's no more Conte, no more Gerald McCoy. Who are they going to hate now? I think you and I both know who. Number 3. He's next up. And, I'll go down this road. Number 3 seems to be a changed man. You know how he was always happy-go-lucky with everybody? And you know he loved practice, and he still does. I noticed something today. Now, maybe he had to go to a meeting. I got to be fair. He could have had to go to a meeting. Maybe he didn't have enough time. But of all people to not sign autographs today, went straight out of the Glazer hut.
Could have had an obligation.
Could have had an obligation. So I don't want to claim Jameis doing something. Jameis, right away, left that place. Usually, Jameis is just like Chris Godwin and other guys, half hour, 40 minutes signing autographs.
Does he seem a little more guarded to you, Lee?
Yeah, it's like his personality has changed. Now, I don't know if it's because let's be honest, he's been a pinata.
Well, he's been humbled. He's been humbled.
He's been a pinata for people. And I don't know if that finally got to him or if he just said, I got to worry about football and all this other crap. But if I get re-signed, I'll be back to my normal self. I got to worry about football and football only, and anything else is immaterial right now. That very well could be that, you know, maybe he was told to do that. Like, hey, just worry about football. Forget autographs. You can sign autographs. You can take the rest of your life to sign autographs. You got to worry about football. We need you. Go to a meeting. Get in a book. Focus. Now, that very he could have been ordered to do that. I don't know. But I just, we both know Jameis and his, I call it happy-go-lucky personality. He really is. Football practice field is his happy place. And he's always signing autographs, always yucking it up with people, always talking. He's reserved now. You try to strike up a conversation with him. He kind of like looks at you and might grimace.
Well, what hasn't changed, to be fair, is his work ethic.
Oh, he's
never
got
a question.
Workaholic. That's never been a question. You said that. You said on SiriusXM NFL radio yesterday. 110%. That's never been a question. And you always talked about his enthusiasm.
Yes.
That's not there right now. When he was talking earlier, that was last week when they brought him to the podium and he spoke, he was enthusiastic, but it wasn't exuberance. It used to be just exuberance. It was just bouncing off of them. And
they have a very regimented schedule.
Yeah, yes. So very well could have been Jameis had to get to a meeting, had to do something else, had a commitment, had an obligation, or was told not to do this. He was one of the first guys out of the hut today. He didn't sign autographs. Like, whoa. And that was on top of a couple other things that he tries to strike up a conversation with him. And usually he would talk a little bit, and he's not doing that this year. I don't know if he's changed or it's something different about him.
Zach, as far as the ramifications of McCoy signing in the division, I'll say this up front. Bucks go to Charlotte week 2 on a Thursday night. Buck fans will be tuned in, obviously rooting for the visitors. And then you will not see McCoy at Raymond James. They will play them in London. They will play them in London.
The new Tottenham Stadium.
So,
is that what it is?
I think so.
I believe that's right. So if McCoy's, seeking revenge on his detractors in the stands, he's not going to get that great.
It's only a one-year deal, so.
That's right. Now, Zach, I'll put you on the spot. How much does McCoy have left in the tank, and can he help the Carolina Panthers?
I'll say yes, he can help.
Right in that six-sack range right now.
31 years old. How much does he have left for a defensive lineman who's been taking a beating the last 9 years in the trenches? You have to wonder how much is still there.
Think he's got more talent around him in Charlotte?
Yes, I do. Mario Addison is a very nice defensive end.
He's emerging.
10-sack guy, I want to say, something like that. There's a lot of talent on that defense. You got Luke Kuechly, arguably the best middle linebacker in the game. Thomas Davis is gone. He's now a Charger, but still some guys. James Bradbury emerged last year at the cornerback spot. So a lot of talent on that Carolina Panthers defense.
That's the guy that drove Evans crazy one game.
I think twice.
You know who else Bradbury drives crazy? Isbitz, because Isbitz said the Bucs could have had him.
He really played great against Evans. I think he did it twice.
Played.
I remember the game in Charlotte, though.
I think 10 yards, something like that.
Followed him everywhere. He was frustrated. So the McCoy era is over, Lee. It's over. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's the key word. Buck fans got to get over it.
It seems like Bucks fans, and not 100% of them, but the vocal sect, the anti-McCoy, they're applauding this. Yes, it's over. Let's go. Let's get rid of it. Almost like people who had a bad year, and here comes New Year's Eve, and they're celebrating because the year is over with. They're turning a new leaf. So we shall see. As far as why McCoy left, we talked about earlier that I had heard through someone who's close to the family that none of the Bucks coaches had talked to him outside of Arians once. That was a chance meeting away from one Buck place. They just happened to cross paths, which that's weird. It just seemed like the Arians didn't want him at all.
Arians slash Bowles. You got to throw Bowles in the mix, too.
Sure.
If Bowles wanted him, that would have made an impression on Arians, and Arians would have ceded authority to Bowles in that regard.
Well, here's another one. It's pretty clear that long before the draft, they had decided to move on from McCoy.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, when Light said at the combine, he's like, well, I can't say he's coming back. Why didn't they address the defensive line then? I'm not trying to rehash old stuff.
Maybe because they knew they were going to get Sue at that point.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Maybe.
That's the only thing I could think of. Unless they thought Vita Vea was going to take that next step. And that's a little, Madeira Beach card reading.
They couldn't get a fifth-round pick for McCoy. They couldn't do it. Zach couldn't do it.
Now, what did you think yesterday when you were on SiriusXM NFL Radio and Charlie Weiss scolded Arians for saying that he had slipped?
I mentioned it.
You mentioned it?
Yeah, I mentioned it, and I said he went out of his way at the NFL owners' meetings in Phoenix to say he's not the same player he was 4 years ago. Whether you want to debate it or not, why would you say it? And Charlie Weiss, who I didn't think knew that, he did say it until I reminded him, said, you never say that. Charlie Weiss was strong on that. Mm-hmm. Even if you think it, you don't say it. Now, Lee, another point, and you heard me on this show. We had some fun out there, which we did.
Mr. Brooklyn.
And I brought it up. You know, I took over. I wasn't the host of the show, but at some point, in my inimitable style, Lee, I said, now, wait a minute. I want to get Charlie's view on this. And I threw up there the voices that are in Jameis's head this year, led by the Whisperer. Leftwich calling the plays, which I think shocked Bob Papa. He didn't know that Leftwich was calling the plays. He assumed it was going to be Arians, which I think most people outside of Tampa Bay, if they haven't heard different, they assume Arians is going to call plays.
Sure, right.
And then you got Clyde Christensen. Now, who's the fourth guy?
Tom Moore.
And I mentioned Tom Moore, too. Weiss, tell me whether you think I'm misinterpreting him, but Weiss didn't seem to think it was a negative. He didn't seem to think... where I throw up, you know, could be too many voices in his head. He actually praised Christensen, thinks he's a good quarterback's guy. He's got a long history. Loves Arians in terms of an offensive mind. So we'll see how the dynamics play out, Lee. That's yet to be determined.
Yeah, Weiss, if I remember correctly, he didn't think Moore was going to be that involved. He said he's going to be an observer.
But he did read that he was his bitch coach. He loved that. Yeah. He loved that.
And Weiss didn't mention how Moore is a legend in NFL coaching. But he said, he's going to be... He just said that's... He basically said, Arians is going to take care of it.
That's what he said. Yeah,
he said Arians will take care of it.
He said Arians is going to run that team. You know, he might delegate a little here and a little there. Ultimately, it's going to be Arians. And you know what? It better be.
Well,
I
can tell you what an NFL general manager told me this offseason. I'll just go ahead and say he's an NFC general manager. I'll even go a step further.
That's enough over there, Lee.
Well, I'll just say this general manager is in the NFC East.
Look at you.
All right. So you narrow it down to five.
Continue.
And we were talking about Arians and Jameis, mostly about Jameis and Cutter and what was going on or what wasn't going on. This guy looked at me toward the end of the conversation. He looked at me right in the eyes. He goes, Jameis is in good hands now. So Arians has he's well respected within the coaching community.
Let's talk about the Buck GM for a minute. Zach, you read everything that moves on the wire. Lee, you write everything and listen to everything. Jason Light's name has been coming up in the last month because this is the time of year that people from NFL Network and CBS Sports, they're looking for stories. Everybody loves lists. I've learned that over the years. Everybody loves a list.
Yep.
And one of the lists they keep, trying to conjure up is, ranking the NFL general managers. Now, these are guys, theoretically, Zach, they don't have a bone to pick with Jason Light. They're not mad at Jason Light. They don't deal with him on a daily basis. And he's not faring well. To be polite about it, Lee, and you've been, as you should, throwing it up on Joe Buck's fan because it's legit news.
Yeah.
Zach, are they taking unfair pot shots at Jason Light, or are they strictly looking at the man's handiwork?
I don't think it's – I think it's just look at his handiwork. You look at one winning season in 5 years, it's not good enough. Back-to-back 5-11 seasons. And he's on his third head coach. Now, Lovie Smith, I don't know how you can really judge that. But he just hired his second head coach. A losing record, and it's not even close. And what else are you supposed to say?
Most GMs don't survive in this scenario, Lee. They don't survive.
No, they don't. We got to remember that Arians, more than a few times, has said one reason he thought the Bucs' job was attractive was Light. His experience with Light. He likes him. And
he made that known to the Glazers.
Yeah, and I don't think it's irrational to think if Arians isn't here, and neither is Light. I hope Jason stays because I like Jason as a person. I really, really do. But at the end of the day, as Dirk Cutter always said, it's a production league. And you combine the draft picks that at best haven't been developed with the losing record, it's not a good combo.
If they go 6-10... and Arians comes back for year two, does that mean Light has to come back for year two? Zach, or is that the separation point? Is that the breaking point?
That's tough, because you got to think with Arians being
What's Arians going to do? Resign? If you fire Jason Light, he's going to resign immediately?
Yeah.
I mean, Arians was so adamant about Jason Light, too, it would appear like that was one of the really big points of him coming here, is he wanted to work with Jason Light. But if he goes 6-10, that's another losing season. 5 and 6 years.
Yeah, I can see Light surviving a 6-10 or 5-11 season. I'm not saying he will. I can see it, though, because it would be Arians.
Even if Jameis stays healthy and, you know.
Well, that's just it. If Jameis is healthy and has a good year, and some of these draft picks, it would sure help if Noah Spence didn't have to buy a ticket to come to a game. If he could somehow.
It would help if Vernon Hargreaves.
Took the word out of my mouth. Vernon Hargreaves, if he produces, if Noah Spence produces. I mean, there's a bunch of ifs.
Ronald Jones. Throw him in the mix.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Everybody and their brother, and unfortunately I got caught in a trap as well. Everybody and their brother is jumping up and down. The new Ronald Jones. He's made a couple plays.
Arians keeps mentioning him late.
I can't get caught up in the hype. I got to see substance. And he was, I understand he was so awful last year. That two or three plays in underwear football practice. And you just want to grasp onto something because you had nothing last year.
Can't get much worse.
Can't get much worse. But you know what? Let's look at the underwear stars of the past. Underwear football stars of the past. You had this Streeter from Miami. A wide receiver. I thought he was going to be. You had Kenny Bell. Hey, he was a Hall of Famer
in
underwear
favorite,
football.
Kenny Bell.
Kenny Bell was a Hall of Famer. Him and his hair. Between underwear football and his hair, he was a Hall of Famer. And then, of course, and I can't think of this. I want to say Passion. No, Patton.
Solomon Patton.
Kick returner. Oh, my gosh, the guy. You couldn't stop him in underwear
He's
football.
He's a blur. He's a blur.
Yeah. He was a gator.
So I've got to control myself. I got to, you know, I can't jump on, even though Ronald Jones made two or three plays. So did Kenny Bell. So did Streeter.
Who's the track guy from about 3 or 4 years ago?
Jeff
Fastest
Demps.
Guy in football.
Jeff Demps. Gator? Another gator.
You can't catch the guy returning a kick. You can't catch him.
Well, you know what else?
He turned around, he was gone.
You know what else he couldn't do? He couldn't hold on to a football. He fumbled all over the place. So all these guys underwear football, I have to.
Didn't he fumble in the end zone once? And the other team might have recovered
in a preseason game.
I don't know. Some horrible play.
I don't know. That reminds me of Josh Huff.
Maybe I'm thinking of Josh Huff.
He fumbled. It was both games against Saints. I think he had a return that ended up. He lost the ball and he ended up falling at the 1 yard line.
That could happen on a punt. You got a guy bearing down on you.
It was on kickoffs.
It can't happen on a kickoff.
Happened twice.
Oh my. But all right, so what do we got the rest of the week, Lee? What are we looking for? We're coming back on Wednesday. We might have a special guest.
We might not. Here is the most important thing in the remaining two practices of underwear football.
Unless Arians calls off Thursday, and you never know.
You never know. This is the most important thing. I don't think this is unquestionable. I don't think this is arguable. The most important thing is every guy walks off the practice field healthy that practice.
That is correct.
Anything else, I don't give a damn about. I'm done with it.
Absolutely correct.
Everybody needs to be healthy. If everybody's healthy, that is a productive.
Because in the next 2 days, when you call up your second favorite website, which is Pro Football Talk.
Oh, yes.
Your second favorite website. In the next 2 days, you're going to read some stories about some guy messing up his ankle, his knee.
Reuben Foster.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, Reuben Foster. Already.
You know,
yeah.
Football takes a hell of a toll.
Happens
every year. And certainly in the preseason. Didn't Dotson wreck his knee? First preseason game up in Minnesota?
Yeah, that was Jameis' first game,
Jameis' first?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Then they had to call in Gosler Chehalis to come replace him.
Who actually did his first year, did a commendable job.
They had a strong, nice, balanced offense.
His second year was awful.
Yeah.
All right, Lee, take us out, my man. Take us out.
Well, Ira, the special guest? Are you eager for this special guest?
Yes. Our fans are going to love it. We might have him for only a limited time, but we're going to cherish every microsecond. Zach, you might even get a question in. We'll see. And hopefully we got Isbitz back.
Speaking of which, I'm going to ask you this question. I know you were at Sunday at the celebration of Steve Dumig's life. Todd Wright had a powerful podcast. If people haven't listened to Todd Wright's podcast dedicated to Steve Dumig, the only word that is apropos for me to describe that is powerful.
Powerful.
Any thoughts on
that? A couple of things. One, outstanding turnout. It shows the friends that he made, you know, what people thought of him in the community. Charlie Belcher did a standout job in a very difficult circumstance. Kept things light. Could have been an overly somber occasion. Mm-hmm. Steve's wife was there, the daughter that he loved to talk about, mm-hmm. Jill. And I spotted Todd Wright and sat right in front of him. Steve was there. Phil Esposito brought the house down at the end, as Phil can do. Lee Allstott with his wife was there. Shelton Quarles representing the Bucks. Bill Wickett from the Lightning was there. Rick Vaughn, who used to be Joe Madden's right-hand man. And that's ironic because, you know, you talk about a pinata. Joe Madden was Dumick's pinata for a few years. And that showed a lot of guts and it showed his savvy as a radio. And Lee, you're a connoisseur of this kind of stuff. You got to get the listeners, and you got to keep the listeners. And does it really matter if they love you or hate you? As long as they're not lukewarm. That's what it's all about, right, Lee?
Yeah.
And DAE loved that. So he picked on Madden, and, you know, 1/4 of the audience agreed with him about the craziness that Madden was doing. But you also got to respect they were winning 90 games and going to the playoffs. 3/4 of the people thought Dumick was crazy. But you add it all up, and they're all listening. Lee, what the hell's he going to say about Madden on Monday? That's talk radio for you. I said it in my column. We're not going to see his like again. We're not going to see it. 20, 25 years. You know, this isn't New York, but it's not Dubuque, Iowa either. This is a fairly major sports market. We got 3 pro teams. And Dumick would talk about sports nobody else wanted to talk about, like soccer. He was big into gambling. He loved golf. You know, and it was great to see Nancy Dinellen there, a fabulous sports
player.
Let's not forget about the mark she made in the radio
business.
Oh, she's a
pioneer.
You know, she went to Seattle. She knocked them for a loop over there. They'd never seen anything like it. And then ESPN, I believe, at least she was simulcast on ESPN television for a while.
Yes.
Which is, you know, that's a heck of an honor. So I was very proud to be there, very glad I went. Good to see Steve over there. DA, of course, out in force. Mm-hmm. We're always going to remember Steve Dumick. He came, he conquered. And the one point I wanted to make above all in that column was, you can have a powerful station that goes up, yes, Zach, almost to Gainesville, or maybe to Gainesville, but
it
almost
stops
to Gainesville.
Stops at Ocala.
Oh, no, it goes all the way up to the panhandle, you can hear. If you go to Central Florida, the signal peters out. But you can pick up, I've picked up DAE clearly in Naples and in Tallahassee.
Wow.
Yeah.
So my point is you can have the strongest signal in the world, but if you don't have that right guy behind that microphone, it doesn't mean anything. He was the right guy at the right time. For the Bay Area. He helped Phil Esposito's Lightning immensely in those early years. He knew hockey. Not a lot of people in this market did. Phil recognized his passion for hockey, his knowledge. They became close friends. So this is our farewell to Stephen Dumick. He made quite a mark in the Bay Area. Farewell, my friend.